morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome again to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me, my beloved co-host.
My cousin, Tino. You know, someday we're going to lay out that beloved thing. It's starting,
it's getting a little old, isn't it?
Well, rumors. You know, I can handle the rumors, but I just worry about you. Yes, my cousin, Tino, here. Today we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, education.
Mike is about the most dedicated education talker I know.
Oh, my. Education talker.
He taught in high school for many years down in Cottonwood and also at the college. So he's the education expert.
High school extension. You know. We have Rosemary Papa this morning is going to talk. She talked to League of Women Voters. She's going to here February 15th. She's going to have a little chat with our local league.
Yeah. She's actually giving two talks that day, one up here in Sedona and the other down in Clarkdale.
So League over there? Good morning, Rosemary. Say hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yeah, let's just prove that you're here. We fake it a lot.
So Rosemary has her doctorate in education and was the Dell and Jewel Lewis Endowed Chair of Educational Leadership at Northern Arizona University. She's written, I would say 5,000, but she's written 100 journal articles and 20 books about educational issues. And she's an expert. So anyway, she's speaking at the League of Women Voters, and we're lucky to have her come in and talk to us today. We hope you'll make those league meetings, and we'll announce the times and stuff later in the show. The topic of her talk, so let's start there, is the state of education in Arizona. Ground zero is not the goal. So what do you mean by that? What's the focus of your talk, your upcoming talks?
Well, when you think about the plight of Arizona children just within our state or across the nation, here's some statistics that we can start with. 33%, that's 214,000 plus white children live in low-income families. 62%, that's almost 42,000, black children live in low-income families. 67%, 450,000 plus Hispanic children live in low-income families. And 32% of Asian Americans live in low-income, and that's about just under 13,000. 77% or 57,000 of all American Indian or Navajo children live in low-income families. This is our Arizona statistics. Pretty frightening when you think about it.
So we're talking about lots of poor children, lots of children coming from poor families. And 13,000 is the federal cutoff, $13,000?
Low income.
That's considered low income?
Low income is considered for a family of four. That's two children and two parents, or a woman and three kids, is about $41,000 to survive.
Oh, thank you. That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, federal low income.
Yeah. That's moving. Yeah, got it.
So what do you mean by ground zero?
Well, by ground zero, it's our rush, our ideological rush, you might say, to ensure that there is so much school choice that it is wiping out our public education. And no one has, we can go back to the history of when schools began in our state and in our country. And, we grew out of only religious schools for a lot of reasons. Especially rural America discovered that by having having their children be able to have an elementary education, public biologically derived, that they learn to count, and they learn to, that would make them better at counting the cows and the sheep on the farms, and it got them to be able to read, and reading the weather almanac for understanding seasons and farming became critically important. And so that rise of public education really began in a way that said, we are going to educate our children for the best of our communities. We're going to ensure that they understand what positive good citizenship is. That became synonymous then with understanding democracy in our country. And so when you say, when I say a drive down to ground zero, it's trying to understand why our state legislatures are so focused on wanting to ensure that by maximizing school choice, they are in effect killing off public education.
But aren't they intending to do that? I mean, aren't they intending to damage public education? Aren't they intending to put kids in all kinds of separate schools? And the whole idea, or I guess the indirect impact of public education, like when I went in a small town in Oklahoma, the rich kids, the poor kids, the white kids, the black kids, we had a lot of Native American folks, all went to the same school, studied more or less the same curriculum. You mean had choice of courses by high school, but isn't that part of it? And if you have everybody segmented off, how are people going to learn about other people, and how are they going to have a common knowledge? And I think what Mike and I see so much is, in trying to discuss politics, is there's just no common ground of facts that people agree on.
Well, that's it. The political ideology is driving just everything in the state of Arizona, the legislature, and I say idiot legislature, but we're trying to start out a little more neutral this morning.
What I think was really important in what you said, because we all believe in choice. Choice is really the ground of sort of American thinking and feeling, is that the way they're doing choice is actually systematically undercutting public education.
That's an important tough point, because they felt, certainly the proponents of choice over the last 15 years since Keegan started and Symington began this, in Arizona anyway, was that it would raise the bar, that it would charter schools and the non-public schools would become these laboratories of experimentation, of great educational innovation. And some of us knew that they were simply places created so some kids wouldn't have to rub shoulders with, brown kids or black kids or kids of a different religion and all these other. They were created for completely different reasons. And I think now that some of that's coming home to roost in that there are, we've said before on the show, and I'm sure you'll agree, Rosemary, that there are really effective charter schools out there, but there are lots that aren't. I think we want to address that. We want to talk
about
this.
Well, they can also just pick the cream of the crop of the siphoning students, and then they get all these great statistics.
Well, more to her point, the siphoning off of public funds is resulting in measurable damage.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, when you – and we have great public schools in Arizona. We do have great schools. We have such dedicated teachers and dedicated administrators. I try to work with as many of them each year as I can. I write books about our Arizona schools. I research them. I have a great collective group of colleagues at Northern Arizona University that are the best there is. And we're producing great. So what is it that's failing? What is it that isn't working? And why are we constantly being beat up in the newspapers? Well, politically, that ideology just needs to have a place to go, and the politics of the matter are that, you know, we want to emphasize the negative and not the positive. We also are in a state that's highly changing by student population, and that can make some fearful of, oh gosh, what does that mean? For that very reason of having separate schools where, you know, if I'm an orange and you're an apple, let all the apples go over there and let the oranges go over there. And, you know, our increasing Latino population, 450,000 living in poverty.
How many students do we educate in Arizona?
About 1.1 million a year. And we are facing, which tells us that if we allowed the demographics of poverty about our schools, about the children that are going to them, if that was what we were focused on, the poverty element, it wouldn't even so much be a demographic by race and ethnicity. It would be a demographic by gender.
I'm sorry, Rosemary, I'm going to put this out to you then. I know you got some great material there, and hopefully you'll get to it. But we got woefully underfunded schools. And as you said, we got dedicated teachers, dedicated administrators. We got people working for squat, for nothing, because they love children, they love education. So you have achievement higher than you should, basically. I've heard a legislator say, as long as we're in the middle of achievement, this was their goal. They didn't care. They didn't want to achieve over mediocrity. Why should we give them more money? We have these woefully underfunded schools, and yet achievement isn't so terrible, number one. Number two, right now, what's happening now is achievement is finally starting to plummet, because regardless of that dedication, you still need to fund your schools, and teachers are leaving by the droves.
Well, if you starve a family, and I'm going to use this as an analogy, if you don't give them enough food to stay healthy and strong, and then you decide, well, let's even bring that family to the center town square and let's make fun of them, let's humiliate them, let's ensure that their poverty, even though their poverty is not of their making, we are going to just humiliate you. And that's, to me, what our grades A through F in this state reflect, a need by a very sick need to decide that we are going to humiliate our educators. We have a state superintendent of education who does not necessarily believe in colleges and college preparation for teacher preparation. She is.
Is that right? She said that?
Yeah, she's highly critical.
Let me get this straight. The state
highly critical of, yes.
Of public instruction doesn't believe teachers should be college educated.
Well, she does not.
At least she's not that supportive of it.
She's not that supportive of it. She does not believe that is a right way to go for education.
Yeah.
And then you have this ideology of no taxes, that if we absolutely allow ourselves to fall off into this completely, complete anarchy of no taxes, though we do support our firemen and we do support our policemen and we want to support our roads, but why don't we want to support our teachers in our schools? Well, because we want to make choice. Because if everybody has choice, then everyone will make the right choices. And then what does that mean? I mean, when you look at the this were in an election year for president, and you can go right online and you can check what the Democrats, what their platform is, what the Libertarians, the Green Party, and the Republicans. Well, since our state is dominant in one particular party.
We can say Republican on the air. It's one of those words that's okay, especially on Democratic perspective. We say it all the time.
Do you? Okay.
Usually connected with some
with.
Okay. Well, you
go
know,
ahead.
Why are we in Arizona either on the bottom or the next to the bottom in school spending? What is the dynamics? I mean, how do we end up? It's a prosperous state, a reasonably prosperous state. How do we end up on the bottom of school spending? What are the forces that do this?
We want to support business, And that's a great thing to support, but we want to support them to the point of them not paying for anything else. And part of you know, when you look at what the Republican Party platform is regarding welfare and poverty, all of that should be covered through religious charities that foster benevolence and patriotism. No state funds. And then when you look at what they say about schools, it is they reflect a position that children and women in poverty should only receive faith-based supports, and that public education should cease and be replaced by faith-based or home-based schooling.
Wow.
But that's what we spent 150 years. We didn't know the United States was a leader, if not innovator, of the whole idea of public education. Isn't it sort of, in large part anyway, our creation, the idea of a public schools, of public colleges, of public everything? Isn't that what the country, isn't that one of the greatest innovations in the United States? And yet now we've got a whole political party that doesn't believe in it. And if you ever worked in faith-based stuff, there's just never enough money and never enough food, and you know it's not going to work.
Well,
you
not have like that. Have what I see is some lying going on. We can come up with all kinds of other words, but we're speaking directly this morning. What you just read certainly looks like, sounds like the Republican Party of Arizona that I know, but they don't say that. When they campaign, they say they support public education. When they run for office, they talk about how they're going to increase funding in public education. And so they're lying.
So we have a state senator who thinks the world is 6,000 years old and it doesn't believe in this and that.
From our district. Yeah.
And yet when she runs for office, she produces a whole series of pro-education sounding things that you really have to be analytical. You really have to look at carefully what's behind things to really understand what's being said. Otherwise, the feel-good stuff dominates the conversation. And if it's always about feel-good and you don't get past that, then you can't distinguish between the different kinds of people running.
For me, that's a great segue into what Ducey's proposed. People are listening saying, well, no, all that's over. He proposed $350 billion for education over the next 10 years, which is woefully inadequate, by the way, but everybody is still afraid to say, well, if this is like Dad, if we make him mad, then he won't give us anything. Yes, $350 billion is not enough over 10 years and may not be there. It may not be even that much. But if we don't embrace this inadequate amount, then he's going to take away everything. If you could address the Ducey's plan to make things better.
Well, the approach is one of, you know, the Arizona Constitution states clearly the legislature shall make such appropriations to be met by taxation as shall ensure the proper maintenance of all state educational institutions and shall make such special appropriations as shall provide for the development and improvement. Now, when you hear the you know, from the ideology to no taxes to all school choice, which actually there is more of a faith-based approach to all our answers, and you look at what Ducey's budget is, it's woefully underfunded. I mean, look at what he's doing to us with Prop 123. Prop 1, we'll start there, and then we'll go into his specific budget points. Prop 1,
we haven't talked much about that. Go ahead.
Okay, Prop 123 purports, you know, it's the end of a lawsuit. We got the state stopped funding us in 2010, our schools.
Out of its deep respect for the Arizona Constitution, we might add.
That's true. And so then the years have gone by. The state is actually doing better. In fact, if you can even pick up the great newspaper of the Arizona Republic, and you can read now where the business leaders are constantly saying, you know, why when the state is actually making money, but for Ducey to keep his promises of tax cuts, it actually looks like we're doing far worse in this state than we really are. We actually are doing very well right now if we stopped our tax cutting, if we just stopped it today. But, so Prop 123, says is this was amazing. He comes out with this maybe 4 or 5 or 6 days prior to the election for overrides for a lot of school districts in our state. I mean, it's almost was like questionable timing in my mind. Why would you all of a sudden come out with this amazing budget that I'm going to give, and it's going to be great for the next 10 years? We're going to get all this money to our schools. When really, I believe there was an undercutting to try to not let those overrides pass.
Sure.
Because when those overrides pass, it is our local community, is our democracy in action. It within our communities, in the small towns within Arizona and the larger cities within Arizona, saying we want good, strong public schools. He tried to stop that by coming out with the huff and the puff of what his budget was going to be.
Now, the overrides, an override election only allows your school to override its budget by 5 or 10%. But that's it. So it's not like it's some sort of carte blanche or unlimited amount of funding. Go ahead.
That's correct. And if I'm a charter school, I'm already receiving $1,800 a year more than any public school child is receiving, because after all, we're not allowed to do overrides if we're a charter school.
Per student.
Per student. So, I mean, it's pretty shocking.
So, Rosemary, what's the excuse for that, of giving $1,800 a pupil?
It's just that they
more
can't
than
do
the
overrides.
Public schools. What's the excuse for it?
Gosh, we're not going to let them do overrides. It'd be hard for them to, I don't know, but that if they can't do it, we'll give them $1,800. And if you're a public school district, you can't do an override but every 3 years. And then let's go back and look at the history of how successful we are doing overrides every 3 years to try to make up and stay with a state that is funding at just over $5,000 a student, where our states around us are considerably higher. I mean, that makes us 49th in the nation.
Well, that's it. I mean, if your schools are underfunded, and I said this, can you actually have a budget surplus? If your schools are so woefully under, you know, Ducey's running around talking about a budget surplus. Well, there is no budget surplus. He owes it to the schools. The Arizona, you can't find.
I think that's a really good point, Mike. I mean, he's talking about a budget surplus because he's starving the Arizona schools.
Well, and then it's on the back of the students. I mean, it'd be sort of, you were using the analogy of your dad. God, if I'm good, will Dad give me the money?
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's treating the public schools of the state of Arizona as though they are bankrupt, and they're not. They are not bankrupt. They are. It would be immoral to think that our public schools are not working hard every day on behalf of the kids of the state. But Prop 123, which has to, the election is going to be in May, that is giving us only 70 cents to the dollar. Okay, of right. What we're owed
what the Supreme Court of Arizona said.
Yes. You know, how can you be for law and order and just then like blow off the legal structure?
How did they do that? I mean, they blow off 30% of the money that the Supreme Court of Arizona has told them they should spend on the school, and it just disappears. You guys, explain to me this.
You know, there is no explanation, Stephen, and Rosemary would agree. We're laughing here, but I'm laughing anyway, and it's because it's just so incredibly sad. The Arizona School Business Association, ASBO, there's no more conservative group probably in the world besides the Goldwater Institute than the Arizona School Business Officials Association. And I don't have the name quite right. But they are complaining. They are saying that the schools are woefully – you can't fund schools this low and expect education to be effective. However, as Rosemary said, it is effective because of the kinds of people that you have in Arizona education. But even that, at this juncture in 2016, after years and years and years of underfunding, is starting to break.
Don't the teachers get tired, Mike, and move on to?
Well, that's what's happening.
I know from experience here in Sedona that we lost a really brilliant math teacher, great math teacher. He moved somewhere once he started a family, he couldn't make it here anymore in Arizona, and he moved someplace where they paid him
$20,000
a year more.
That's been happening.
That was that, and I think that must be happening all over. To some extent.
Yeah. Bartenders here make much better pay than teachers, but that's that's been that way for a long time.
Well, our high teacher turnover, 64.2 are the average hours worked each week by Arizona teachers. Well, okay, yeah. And that includes 27 hours of direct instruction, but that is then how we're expected to be back online, almost available 24 hours, and we're willing to do that because we believe in kids and parents. Our starting salary is $31,874 is the average.
Say it again, please. I'm sorry.
$31,874 is the average starting salary for Arizona teachers. This is if you go through Northern Arizona University, we're talking 5 years of education.
Yeah, the jailers down here start at 38. The guys, the turnkeys.
Unbelievable.
Go ahead, moving on.
Yeah, $46,000 is plus is the average salary for Arizona teachers over the course of a 20 or 30 year span, and nationwide, our average salary is at just under 75% of the national average, which is, again, just another ongoing, and this comes out of the Tucson Valley Teachers Survey that was done. Most of my figures come right out of our Arizona newspapers. Uh-huh. When you talk about education business leaders, you know, this group you were referring to, consistently they're saying we consistently produce below average share of college educated workers. That is a huge threat, actually, to our economy. If you want to speak of something we should really be worried about,
right.
That is one. We're near the bottom on spending for K-12. Depending on which statistic you look at, we're either 46, 47, or 48th in the nation. And more business leaders are advocating for greater investment in schools. So why would you then come up, if your governor, with a Prop 123, and it goes to vote, it's 70 cents on the dollar of what we're supposed to be receiving immediately. And the reality is that if it passes by the good people of this state, it is going to then have to be approved by the federal government, because in 1910 it was the federal government that gave us the land grants, these state federal land grants, which I've heard some people say to me, "Oh, but gosh, if that land belongs to the state, why are we giving it to the schools?" Well, because it was given by the federal government in 1910 to the schools. It's a state trust for schools in the state of Arizona.
But it was all federal land originally.
It was all federal land.
And it was given to the state for the particular purpose of supporting the school system.
Yes.
Well, this pleases a lot. They want to take over the Koch brothers and want to take over the national parks, and then that's part of...
I guess...
But I predict 123 is going to go down 2-1.
Okay, that was my next question to Rosemary. Yeah. Should people support it or not? And if it goes down, then what happens? Then the schools won't get this little money.
But then it goes back into the lawsuit. And under our current governor, that lawsuit isn't going to be resolved. I don't believe in taking 70 cents on the dollar, but there's a part of me that says our schools really do need that money. We are going to be losing the sales tax, you know, in 2000. The good people of the state of Arizona voted a sales tax increase 5% to 5.6%. So 0.6% goes to our schools. This requires that when... As that is sunsetting under this current regime that we have in Phoenix, it is not going to be renewed. It's not going to be picked back up. And that sunsetting is going to be probably the very ending of what happens to us by 2020. We have two right now companion bills that are in the Senate. They are and the House. They're being fast-tracked, expedited passage. Mm. They want to. And they're called the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts. What they are planning to do, they are an expansion of a bill that allows students with special needs, Navajo students or American Indian students, students in poverty, for the parents to begin to be given the our direct tax dollars directly so they can choose their schools. By 2019 to 2020, this becomes the perfect storm. We'll lose that small tax incentive that we have. Who knows if Prop 123 will have done any good or not? There are some scenarios being played out. Scottsdale Public Schools has said if that passes, we're still not going to be getting any money because that money is only going to go, that little small increase per student is only going to go to you if you are not a school in declining enrollment. Well, public schools not in declining enrollment, tell me where in our state there are many of those anymore.
Sure.
So again, it's a smoke and mirrors for Prop 123.
Well, I see.
Wow, this is depressing.
Well, it'd be much simpler just to fund your schools instead of coming up with these ideologically driven craziness.
I think Michael's right. It really is ideology, because otherwise it doesn't, and the more you describe it, the less sense it seems to make. I mean, it seems counterproductive in terms of economic development. It seems counterproductive in terms of having a civilized society and reducing crime and every other way. You know, to have a good education system seems like our strong suit, and there's no way, place, and no job from the military to becoming a teacher that having a good education doesn't help the United States.
We're talking to Rosemary.
Arizona.
We're talking to Rosemary Papa, author, educator, and up at Northern Arizona University. Do you teach teachers? Is that part of your?
Yes, I teach teachers as well as teachers wanting to be school principals, administrators. Superintendents, and
all right, educate. She teaches Arizona educators that if they're have any sense at all, they go to other places to work, out of state. She's going
well,
to be.
Well, we hope not, Mike. They'll stay here no matter what. But,
yeah, well, that's a topic for another day.
But I think what I think is this.
I want to talk about it.
Wait a minute. What I think is this is it sounds to me like what Rosemary and you are saying is that the state of Arizona is really riding on the charity of the teachers and the administrators, and it's putting all the negatives on their back and then grandstanding about taxes.
Yes. Well, when you, think about poverty, I started off with those shockingly high numbers of the children and families in our state. We know that poverty is primarily sexist. It is on the backs of women and children. And when you look at why we are not being funded in public schools. One, as a woman especially, I ask, is there a gender issue that is also undergirding this ideology that says we're going to starve you in those schools, and we're also going to, though, expect you to continue to give? I mean, educators enter education because we love children. We want to do good. We want to make a difference. We believe in the better of humanity. We believe that we want to produce happy future citizens to keep our democracy strong. And it's hard, very hard, to wake up every day and read the political rhetoric that has nothing to do with us within our local communities and where we might be warmly embraced and cared for. And I do encourage all Arizona communities to love your schools and love those teachers and love those principals and love those staffs and those bus drivers, because we've been under such negative press that is so wrong. We have been under A through F humiliation that is just so unwarranted and so mean-spirited that, you know, something's got to change, something's got to give. But to all my colleagues out there that are educators, I'm proud of you, I respect you, and keep up the great work.
I'll say this, when you go around with Mike to places, from a coffee house or anywhere else, his former students come up and greet him. and thank him.
I prefer
kind
they
of,
buy me drinks. You know, forget this. These hugs are great.
It's kind of inspiring.
I'm down with hugs.
He's modest about it, but everywhere he goes, his former students come up and greet him and talk to him.
I wasn't a very good teacher, but I was humane. That was the idea, I believe, of speaking to an education professor here. I figured I couldn't be a very good teacher. I wasn't that smart. And it's a lot of hard work. So that's the point we're kind of getting at. I think one of the things you're maybe assuming is that people care. Kids don't vote, and parents there aren't enough of them to be involved to make a difference at the Arizona legislature. Or the shell game is working. Look over here. I'm going to give you $350 billion. Yes, it's woefully inadequate compared to what I should be giving you. But you know, take it or leave it kind of thing, and forget what the Arizona Constitution says. So there's this whole complicated game going on for some reason or another, and our leadership isn't helping. We talked about Ducey and his allegiance to no taxes, and it doesn't take a genius financier to say, if I don't have enough money, I need to get more revenue. If there's not enough to take care of prisons and schools and roads and those state responsibilities, I need more revenue instead of cutting revenue. So, but this particular leader wants to cut revenue at a time when he should be finding more revenue. Supporting a state on sales taxes, we are finding is absurd because everybody's buying things on the internet. Sales, so they're finding, I imagine, hopefully, a way to tax those things. On the internet,
they are taxing Amazon, which is the largest.
Well, that's one
retailer.
But I did read somewhere where they're still losing something like $25 billion a year in taxes. It's because Joe's sheet metal place isn't paying state taxes, and I just bought a dustpan from them or something. But the point we're trying to tell you, so our leader, between Ducey and Diane Douglas, our state superintendent of public instruction, that doesn't believe, in public instruction. I'm sorry to be so, I'm inferring from my tone, Rosemary, that I'm a smart ass here, but I don't know how else to respond. You have these serious stats here, and these serious, it's a serious, serious thing this morning. You're talking, we talked in glowing terms about the future of what education should be, why it's important, how it, if you expect people to participate in our democracy, in our form of government, if you expect people, then they need to have some basis for that, and they're not getting it.
Well, yeah, Diane Douglas is her own way out there person who, she said very little when she was running. In fact, if you went to her website, I teach politics in education at the university, and when you went to her website, she had like three lines of what she stood for. Yeah. She narrowed her speaking engagements before the election to only other like-minded groups, and therefore she wasn't ever asked anything.
But it's all about Common Core, as I recall.
Yes, well, hates Common Core, doesn't want Common Core, and whenever she was just this morning, I heard her, this station did a blurb on her on the news of her calling down some senator who was proposing a bill, and she again related this bill back to, well, that's Common Core in the background, and we don't want Common Core, and I'm against it, and every citizen should be eye opened.
Well,
she's really different. I mean, she certainly, she almost got recalled when she was her only knowledge other than going to school as a kid, was that she served on the Peoria school board.
Yeah, she had really no background in education. She ran against somebody who had extraordinary background in education.
That's what we couldn't understand, is how you have this incredibly qualified candidate.
Yeah, we interviewed him here on the show, and the guy was ready to go, and we ended up with Diane Douglas,
but
who
negative campaign
can barely function.
But it works. It works. I mean, if you ever want to think it doesn't work, if you want to sit down and say kumbaya, obviously she ran on
And people don't know what Common Core is.
Anti-Common Core.
You know, but she ran. Yeah, but she ran. Really, just it was a party vote. I have to think that people really didn't know or didn't think and weren't thinking.
Yeah.
And they ran, and they did a straight down the line Republican vote, because I think even today I don't know of any Republicans. And I don't hear any legislators speaking on her behalf, supporting her. Certainly the governor doesn't. I don't hear of any Republicans nationwide that are giving her support. Yes, go, Diane, you're right. I don't hear that or read it. And she is you know, in her state of education legislative address in January, she's doing her state of the, you would think she'd talk a little bit more in detail about the state of public education in the state. That's her topic. That's her role. It should be fairly straightforward. But in the middle of this address that was again just filled with not specific talk, she all of a sudden goes into this statement, just as in the comic Peanuts, Lucy will hold the ball and then yank it away from Charlie Brown at the last minute.
I guess we were supposed to infer.
What did that mean?
Yeah, right.
Is Governor Ducey Lucy that removes the football?
Yeah.
Is education, is public education in the state the football? Who is she? Yeah. Charlie Brown? Or I mean, I don't know. You know, again, it's that, you know, rhetoric. I mean, Common Core is basically and primarily to prepare students for work and college or career technical training.
And it had already been going 5 years when she got elected. It was already a part created, by the way, the governors, mostly Republican governors of the United States. I mean, this is where Common Core came from. So it wasn't exactly some liberal plot. Real quickly, the recall for Diane Douglas, well, it didn't work.
It didn't work, right.
Why?
Well, the recall when she was a school board member didn't work. And this recall, maybe because it was begun in January or February, the talking around it by the time they legally could go after her it was in July. And why it failed by December, you know, I'm going to say there is a rather insidiousness nature of not being able to talk politics if you are a public employee in the state.
Right.
If I wear my League of Women Voters up at NAU, I can have at least five different people walk down the hallway saying, take that button off. That is politics. You are not allowed to have that button
really?
On, which is pretty shocking.
Yeah.
So it's not that that is the true case, but it's that that is the perception.
Wow.
And so that's why when we say teachers don't show up to vote, then, you know, that's that maybe what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Is that we've been so convinced that none of our professional organizations are not allowed to speak. They've been tied up with their funds. And so if you don't get the other side...
So the message couldn't get out who she was.
Message
she
can't get out.
All right, we are talking to Rosemary Papa. We're going to wrap up...
Has two talks coming up.
Yeah.
February 15th, 9 a.m. to 10:30 at Yavapai College here in Sedona, room 34. If you have questions for Rosemary, you want to hear more from her, that's a good place to go. And then later that afternoon or early afternoon on February 15th, she'll be speaking at Yavapai College in Clarkdale from noon to 1:30. And the room is G106, but I think you can find it if you just make it to the college.
There's not a lot going on there. What do you want, Rose? What's up?
Let me just end with, you know, the greatest foe of democracy is ignorance, especially social and political ignorance. And the chief concern of democracy is education, not in the sense of individualistic culture, but in the sense of social education. Please, state of Arizona, all you good people out there who love those teachers, who remember great teachers when you were in school, for our kids and their kids, we want to make it right.
Thank you. Very well. Listen, on more business, we got Paul Johnson is going to be here. Talk about the open primary thing at the Democrats of the Red Rocks meeting February 18th, the Old Sedona. Please come. You can get this show, this podcast, will be up on the VBID.org website Verde Valley Independent Democrats website. Pick up this show and more right there. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.